Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
My name is Sebastian Hurtado. I'm an Ecuadorian entrepreneur based in Quito, Ecuador. I am a trained economist who has done graduate studies in the US in business and government. I am the founder of the leading Ecuadorian political risk consultancy based in Quito, but we do work around the Andean region too. And most recently, I am the co-founder of Friendly Transfer, along with my wife, which is a platform to facilitate small international transfers. So that's the short story.
Sebastian, thanks so much for making time join us on Ivy Podcast. You're definitely a first one from Ecuador that we're hosting on the podcast out of 320 episodes. So that's that. I appreciate
you joining
us. So tell us a little bit more about your background, the thumbnail version, and also a motivation behind really that led you and your wife to start Friendly Transfer as well. Share some background story with us.
Sure. Well, just a few years back, I was with my wife. I was studying in the US. I was studying government in the US. I was based in Boston. And, you know, we faced the same problem that many people working or living or studying in different countries face every day. You know, we had to bring money from Ecuador to Boston to pay for our expenses for school and other expenses. And it was a tricky process and expensive process, especially if you're bringing money from South America or Latin America. So every time we needed to bring money from Ecuador to the US, we will talk to a friend who was based in the US and had the opposite need. He will need to send money from the US to Ecuador. And we will tell this person, don't send your money. I mean, deliver your money here to me in the US and I'll deliver my money to you in Ecuador. So there's no money crossing borders. And we save on both sides. We save on transfer fees and other expenses that are involved in international transfers. So we basically one day decided, why don't we just, sometimes it was difficult to find someone with the same need. So we decided, why don't we just build a site where people can meet and arrange this kind of transaction. And that's how Friendly Transfer got started. You know, we started building a small version of it, and we've been just improving it over time. And that's the background story of Friendly Transfer. It has been like a hobby for us throughout these years, but I think it's been a very enjoyable experience. And we're really thrilled of seeing people using it and saving a lot of money by using it.
Yeah. No, it's definitely a problem that I have been encountering for so many years myself, just being from Kazakhstan. I came to US a long time ago, but it's still a problem. It's still a challenge, you know, having family and relatives overseas. You know, you're always in that, you know, that vicious cycle of looking for ways, cost-effective solutions to help out, to make some type of transfer over there. And I was always curious in terms of some of the semantics of what really makes it so expensive to be able to make that transfer from one financial institution to another, which in concept seems like a very simple transaction. You go from one, you specify the, you know, the account information, and the money gets sent without having any understanding of the infrastructure or anything that goes behind the scenes. Can you elaborate a little bit further on that? What really makes these transfers so expensive, and what are maybe in non-financial terms, so that we get an idea of basically what happens behind the scenes?
What is it is basically because of how the financial international financial infrastructure is built. It is built around capital. It is built around physical infrastructure. And it is built around people working, lots of people working on these transactions. And you know, that's what makes this sort of transactions expensive. An additional factor is that there's a lot of regulation behind this transaction, financial transactions in general, and cross-border transactions in particular. So the fact that you need capital, you need infrastructure, and you need to comply with lots of regulations makes these transactions expensive. But they're particularly expensive for small transactions, you know, because you still have fixed costs that you have to attach to each transaction. So small transactions, which are the vast majority of international transactions, not in volume, but in quantity, because it's just people sending small amounts of money around, are very expensive to do through the traditional financial, international financial infrastructure that has all these legacy costs. And you know, traditionally, you have needed all this infrastructure and all this capital to handle international transaction or financial in transaction in general, because you had information bias, you had risk that you had to manage, you had transactions with counterparts that were really far away from you, you had no idea who you were dealing with, you didn't have enough information. But you know, all that has changed now with the new technology, with the fact that we have social networks, with the fact that we have a lot of information about other people and about other places. And that basically reduces the uncertainty. That reduces the need for risk management and for financial capital, which allows you to reduce, to make transactions in a different way and not dependent on financial intermediaries. And basically what I think that's what foreign transfer is about, you know, is like leveraging those trends, you know, and we are basically getting rid of the costly intermediary, financial intermediary in the international transaction. We completely get rid of it. And we rely on people building trust between them and using their own money and their own capital to complete transactions. And that saves a lot of money because you don't have all this cost attached to an international financial transaction.
That's very interesting. And take that a little bit further for those who are looking to start a career or build, you know, a set of skill sets in fintech or decentralized finance. What are you finding these days to be of exceptional value in terms of particular skill sets that are in high demand to be able to succeed in the space of fintech? And what are you observing in the market in terms of talent? What is very scarce? What is very difficult to find these days?
You know, the thing is that traditionally, I was once a banker. I used to work for a bank, so I have sort of financial background, and I'm also an economist, so I have financial background. And you know, in finance used to be about people knowing finance or at least numbers, and with that sort of background. And you know, finance or fintech, it's not necessarily about traditional finance. So you need new skills that I will say had to do with understanding, for example, as I mentioned, social networks. And that's not a necessarily a skill that a finance guy will necessarily have. You need to understand direct interaction with people. You need to understand the user experience. You need to understand products that are easy to manage for like everyday people. So I think those are talents that are very important in fintech right now, and that are not necessarily connected with an understanding. I think a basic understanding of finance is important, because I think somehow I sort of figured out these trends that I was seeing on the finance arena. And I understood how the financial system worked or works. Mm-hmm. And that allowed me to understand new ways on how to go around that legacy system. But I think the most significant work we've done in Friendly Transfer is understanding the specific needs of these users and designing a platform that is easy for them to use and that allows them to trust the platform and trust other users in transactions, which is something given when you're dealing with a financial institution, but it's not necessarily the case when you're working on a social network. Yeah. So those skills are really important and I think in the fintech area and are in short supply, I will say.
Yeah, absolutely. And with a global just shortage of highly talented people and, you know, the war on retention that a lot of companies are dealing with these days, I think it adds another layer of complexity when it comes to finding the best talent, especially in something, you know, niche areas such as fintech and, you know, decentralized finance. I think it's a trend that's here to stay. And it's just, you know, I'm always fascinated with the different strategies that companies implement in order to be able to succeed in the space of just talent acquisition, surrounding themselves with the best talent. And it's always difficult.
But on the other hand, I would say that, you know, it is interesting. On the other hand, you know, you can tap on a global pool of talent more than ever before. And that has been really helpful, I think, for fintechs around the world and for fintechs based in Latin America specifically, because, you know, the pool talent in some specific technical areas are is more limited around here.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more with you on that. In terms of different, you know, technology innovation trends that you're personally excited about in your space, in fintech, where do you see the markets going? What are you mostly passionate about these days when it comes to innovation in your industry?
I will have to say decentralized finance, and I'm not really sure if you're familiar with that, but it's basically something that has gained importance in the past few years, which is basically sort of what we've been building a Friendly Transfer around, you know, the possibility for users and people to connect and make transactions directly between each other without financial intermediaries. So that's sort of been booming in the past couple of years. And I think it's a key development in order for making especially small transactions economically viable. Because as I said, when you use a legacy financial system and you need capital and you need all these other resources, that makes transactions expensive, and especially small transactions very expensive. So decentralized finance is all about connecting people directly so they can make transactions without intermediaries. So basically, I think we built a friendly transfer around that trend. But the thing I will say is that most of the excitement right now on decentralized finance or DeFi is around using crypto. And I think that has a future, but right now, the fact is that the world doesn't run on crypto. And at least our users or our user base, they need fiat. And the problem now is that, getting into and out of crypto is still expensive. And for a small international transaction, it is still as expensive as using a regular bank or financial institution. It makes sense to make an international transaction in crypto if you're going to remain in crypto. But if you have to get into crypto and then get out to fiat, it is still an expensive transaction. So I think that has a future, but for now, for our users, for what's going on in the world, in the real world every day, our way of managing those financial transactions are, I think, the most optimal way and the cheapest way to do it, because we basically, our transactions are, our users work on fiat. But still, the very concept of decentralized finance, I think, is a very significant development that will have a major impact around the world. And it is, I think, a major challenge for traditional financial institutions.
Uh-huh. That's very interesting. And you touch upon a very pressing topic, especially these days with, with the fiat and the cryptocurrency space. It's always challenging. And in terms of friendly transfer, how can your solution provide for cost-effective transfer using the fiat model and also balancing that act, between going the cryptocurrency route or touching the space in just completely different environments? Talk a little bit further around that. What are your thoughts on, just basically building a model that's very simple, but also at the same time, very secure when it comes to the cost-effective transfer solutions using the fiat?
The most expensive part of an international transfer is the money moving between countries. Money never moves between countries. What banks do is just balance their accounts in different countries. But they have to, in order to do that, financial institutions need to comply with a lot of rules, and they need capital in placed in different countries, and they need the infrastructure to do that. And that's what makes international transactions expensive, especially international transactions. So when friendly transfer completely avoids making an international transaction, because our users just make a local transaction, which are either free or super cheap, either within Ecuador or either within the United States. Our users use in the United States PayPal or Venmo or a local transfer, which are very cheap. And the same thing between banks in Ecuador. We are really saving the cost of making an international transaction on both sides. Both users are independently saving that money, which makes one of these transactions significantly cheaper than every user making an international transfer. And I think that's the contribution of friendly transfer, and that's an application of decentralized finance in fiat. And in order to do that, we don't have to necessarily use crypto. And I think it doesn't make sense at this point, because as I say before, getting into and out of crypto, it is still very expensive, so it doesn't make sense. So that's the way we do it, and it's been working. We're amazed. We already have almost 3 years of experience in transactions. No money has been lost. It is amazing how people, if you give them the right tools, the right information, people trust each other, and So yes, I don't see any other way of making, you know, we're dealing with the small transactions. You know, the average transaction in friendly transfer is less than $300. So for sure, if you want to move $100,000 between countries, you go and definitely use a bank, you know, because it makes sense in terms of the cost and the security, because there's risk on $100,000. But if you're talking about small amounts of money, which is what we do, you know, it definitely makes sense to use a decentralized network like the one we have.
Mm-hmm. Right, absolutely. So to shift gears a little bit, as you grow, as you scale your organization, and would imagine that you operate on a global scale, serving the users in all kinds of different markets. What are your thoughts on really positioning yourself to be able to grow in scale and at the same time be able to compete in this highly competitive market when it comes to very, you know, scarce talent? What are some of the strategies that you're planning to implement as part of your organization to be able to build your organization? Because as an executive, I would imagine, you know, recruiting and staffing is one of the top priorities for you, whether you're actively recruiting or not. Just share some thoughts from that perspective with us.
Well, you know, we're still fearing ways to scale. We are not presently working on many countries. It is mostly for now the Ecuador US corridor, but we also have users in Colombia, Mexico. But we definitely we think this is a model you can apply anywhere in the world, because as you mentioned before, you know, everybody has this need and everybody has faces this problem around the world. So, you know, what I can tell you from my experience, you know, the key factor to attract talented people and people who can really contribute is having a good story. Is having a good story about around your business, having a something inspirational behind what you're doing, and something that it's new. You know, I can talk about my other business, which is this political risk firm, consulting firm. I think we built the political risk industry in Ecuador and in some other places in the Andean region, you know. And the fact that we were working on something that no one else was working at that time allowed us to attract and get the interest of people, especially young people who want to be involved in something really new, in something that will allow them to create things that where things are not completely defined or understood, and there's room for creativity, because you don't have a detailed plans and detailed paths to advance your business and to grow your business. And I think that's a very attractive proposition, especially for young talent. And I think that has happened somehow with friendly transfer. We're still small, I would say, but you know, we still have people that want to contribute to help us do what we're doing, you know, because they personally have tried friendly transfer. They've saved money, they see the potential of this, and they have so many ideas on how to move forward. And that's what I think keep people excited and gives you leverage in order to attract the right talent.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if there's a compelling story and the mission that the company is after, I think that always resonates with folks, especially when, you know, the market is so competitive. So it definitely makes sense what you're talking about. Sebastian, in terms of your personal content diets, what are the sources that you utilize on a daily basis to keep yourself educated and informed in the space that you operate in?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, in terms of the fintech industry, which is this area we're basically discussing, you know, I keep up. You know, I really follow the Financial Times. They have a strong area of content around fintech, and they have regular updates. And so I follow the Financial Times reports like every day, and also their podcasts. The other, I also follow several podcasts as yours, which are also a very important sources of information. And in terms of books, what I try to do is usually look for books that provide a sort of a historical perspective on issues. Because I think, you know, someone said that, you know, I think history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes sometimes. So I think you can, I always try to look for those books that take on an historic perspective on what's going on, either on the finance area or fintech areas or policy or politics, depending on what, because you can get some conclusions of what, based on what has happened in the past, to understand what's going on right now and eventually figure out what's going to happen in the future. So I would say those are my sources of information on how I keep up on things.
That's great. Thank you for sharing that. And last but not least, in terms of books, what are you currently reading? And is there a book that you always recommend to others, and why is that?
Well, probably referring to what I just said, you know, in terms of books that takes on a historic perspective of the issues, the one really great one that I've read, well, it's been a couple of years, but I will recommend to people, is the series of Yuval Harari. You know, the series, I'm sorry about that. The series, you know, Sapiens and Homo Deus, you know, that's basically a historic perspective of how humans have evolved. And the second one, that's Sapiens, and the second one is somehow how the human race will evolve going forward. And it's very, very interesting because you get to really understand where we're coming from. And it has a lot of interesting implications and analysis regarding technology and how humans have interacted and will interact with technology. So for someone who is interested in developing technology and taking advantage of the new trends that are coming forward, you know, decentralized finance, artificial intelligence, algorithms, you know, they have so many implications for on the economics, on the economic side, on the political side, that it provides you a really good understanding of what's going on and what's coming forward. And that allows you to come to conclusions that you can take into consideration in your businesses and your ventures and your everyday life and how you educate your kids. So I would recommend a series of books like that.
Yeah, those are great recommendations. And Sapiens, I think that's definitely top of my list that it's been recommended by so many people around me. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. Sebastian, I can't thank you
enough. And Homo Deus.
Yeah, and Amadeus as well. Absolutely. And we'll make those titles available in the show notes for our listeners as well. I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all the podcast guests is do a follow-up recording in about a year where we revisit the conversation from a year ago and see that everything we've discussed still makes sense, still applies. So I'm definitely looking forward to doing that with you as well.
Yeah, me too. No, thank you very much, John, for your time and your interest.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.